This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 440 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest, well, he's a lecturer in international tourism management at University College Birmingham. He's a friend, and he's just been to Colombia. Most importantly, he's been in the first wave of travelers to revisit or visit the island of Providencia, Old Providence, of course, since last year's hurricane, which devastated the island. So he's going to be starting out talking about what he saw in Providence and Providencia, what he saw, his experiences on the island. And then, of course, we digress into tourism in the rest of Colombia. So this is someone who writes about tourism, lectures on tourism. He obviously gives all sorts of speeches about tourism, and therefore he gives us a better idea of where Colombia stands in terms of tourism. So it's a good episode with a nice banter with Simon Faulkner on the line with us from Shropshire in the United Kingdom. And I must say as well that he was also Lecturer of the Year at the University College Birmingham. So that's, you know, no small deal, quite a high accolade there, of course. We'll be talking to him, but of course, thank you to our new Patreon supporters, and thank you so much to the very kind review that we got. The name is not there, but it says Real Journalism. My partner and I do not miss an episode every week. So thank you so much for that. It really means a great deal to Emily and myself to hear that kind of feedback. So please leave a review wherever you listen, wherever you subscribe. And of course, perhaps sign up on Patreon and support us. That's patreon.com/Columbia Calling. Can I also remind you to check out our sponsors, because without them, this becomes even more difficult. Of course, sponsor one, the Columbia Calling podcast, is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. Also, this episode is brought to you by BNB Colombia Tours, expert in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. So check out their website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Columbia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So, of course, at the end of this show, once you've listened to Simon Faulkner talking and you've whet your appetite to come to Colombia, travel around Colombia, but don't know quite how to do it, check out BNB Colombia. So that's bnbcolombia.com. So be inspired. Come out to Colombia. And thank you again. Don't go away. We'll be the news. We'll have the news from Emily Hart, and then we'll be back in segment three with Simon Faulkner from Shropshire. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories for the week of September 12th, 2022. The United Nations Development Programme has reported that Colombia is worse off now than it was in 2015. This is according to the new edition of the Human Development Index. Although there is a global fall in scores, Colombia has deteriorated more than most countries. Colombia now ranks 88th among the 191 countries evaluated. Its score is slightly below the average for Latin America, but slightly above the global average. Chile, Argentina, Costa Rica, Mexico, Brazil, and Peru have higher scores. Ecuador, Paraguay, Bolivia, Venezuela, and most Central American countries are lower. 9 of the bottom 10 countries measured are located in sub-Saharan Africa. Indicators measured include a long and healthy life, years in education, and GDP per capita. President Gustavo Petro has secured a so-called mega-coalition in Congress this week. At the Wednesday deadline for parties to define their position in regard to the government had gained the support of a majority in both legislative chambers, 79 of 108 senators and 141 of 187 seats in the House of Representatives. The Conservative, Liberal and U parties, three of the largest benches, have declared themselves government parties. This does not oblige them to vote in favour of government bills, but is a symbolic endorsement. In formal opposition are the Democratic Centre and the Anti-Corruption League. Parties which declare themselves in opposition are entitled to additional space in the media, but are not able to access positions in the executive. Guerrilla group, the ELN, has pronounced itself against the new Total Peace Bill, criticising the intentions of the government to negotiate peace with armed groups like the Gulf Clan. The ELN ask not to be equated with those groups, saying that they are not opposition organisations but are instead organised crime gangs connected to the interests of the elite. However, the ELN negotiator announced that talks with the Colombian government could begin in a matter of weeks, possibly rotating between Cuba and other locations. Spain and Chile have also offered to host. In addition, guerrillas of the mobile column Urias Rondon, FARC dissidents, present in Nariño, have announced that they are ready to announce on a ceasefire, which will allow them to hold dialogue with the government. The commander of the column has made demands for substitution of illicit crops, infrastructure programs, social welfare, and the public naming of officers, police agents, and soldiers who are under investigation in Nariño for their links with paramilitary groups. Deforestation in Colombia's Amazon rose to over 50,000 hectares in the first half of this year. It could finish close to 11% higher in 2022 than in 2021, the Environment Ministry has announced. Last year, total deforestation in Colombia reached more than 170,000 hectares, of which around two-thirds was in the country's Amazon rainforest. The world's biggest banana company, Chiquita Brands, will face trial for financing terrorism in Colombia in the 90s and the early 2000s. A US appeals court has thrown out an earlier ruling that there was not sufficient evidence to sue the country for its links with paramilitary group the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia. In a 2007 plea bargain, Chiquita had admitted that it knowingly paid the paramilitary group, as well as allowing the group to use its port. This news comes as the Truth Commission report that the company's sponsorship of these groups operationally strengthened the group to carry out human rights violations against the rural population. Colombia and Venezuela have announced that commercial flights and cargo transport will be allowed across their shared border as of September the 26th, after a year of closure. The announcement is just the latest in the renewed relationship between the two countries since Petro took office in August, promising to re-establish relations. The governments have yet to coordinate the full reopening of the land border crossing, though the border is currently open to pedestrians. The border is over 2,000 kilometres long. Those were your top stories for this week. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I am Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. My very special guest. Well, it's become a friend over the weeks, months, and years. Simon Fulker. Yeah, of course. Well, no, I mean, we got in touch. You got in touch through Instagram many years ago. I guess it was before COVID.
Yeah, I think
when
so.
You're planning.
I did the literal. I snuck into your DMs.
Yes. It was about travel to Colombia, and then of course the mm-hmm. conversation, and we have a mutual interest in floundering football teams. So
underachieving football teams. Yes.
Well, you're the claret and blue side of Birmingham, and I'm sort of the yellow North London.
The irony that my football team stayed up on because yours went down as well, so we had the common pain of relegation to deal with.
But I have no hard feelings about that. It was a little bitter at the time, but that's okay. So you're a long-suffering Villa fan. I'm a long-suffering Watford fan. But here you go. The lows are constant, but the highs are euphoric when they happen.
The highs are more glorious for the continuous lows. Yeah, I think that's nice.
But anyway, Simon Faulkner is a lecturer of international tourism management at University College Birmingham, no less than lecturer of the year. And more importantly, he employed me a couple of times. So this is cool.
And we'll continue to do so, hopefully.
Hope so. I think what is so interesting, Simon, is you finally made it to Colombia. Post COVID, you finally came. You came with a friend and your son, and then later your partner came over. So you've sort of done a whole variety of travel. You've not only done travel with mates or travel with children, and then as a bit more romantic couple. You're sort of ticking a lot of boxes in terms of tourism when they think, because Colombia has so many different ideas of how to improve tourism, family tourism, and of course couples tourism. That's what they want to aim at. So you've covered these, and so
I ticked all the different demographic boxes.
The only thing you don't tick is let's say the over 50s.
I probably didn't get the lads tourism either. I didn't get to do the real party tourism. We tried a little bit in Cartagena, but over 50s will come back.
But I don't know about the lads tourism. We especially in Cartagena or Medellin, we've got to sort of shy away from that a bit.
I agree.
It falls into different categories, unfortunately, and we can talk about that a bit. But what I am most interested in, and I think my listeners too, is that you went to Providencia about a day and a half after it opened up again to tourism.
Yeah. And we did.
Providencia has been in the news. Well, it was in the news over a year ago for being destroyed in the hurricane. And then our president, Ivan Duque, went out and claimed and made bold claims that within 100 days he'd rebuild Providencia and it would all be amazing. And then I guess a week into his presidency, President Petro went out and was just like, oh my word, nothing's been done. And then we've seen, it's been revealed how much has been spent to rebuild, I don't know, 10 houses or so. And President Duque is still tweeting about how amazing the job was that he did in rebuilding Providencia. Now, I can't make any decisions and I can have opinions, of course, but you were there on the ground. Yeah, I want to hear what you saw there in Providencia. What is the reality?
To start with, when we booked our flights to Providencia via San Andre, and I did some research into Providencia. Everyone wanted to go for a long time, but since before the hurricane, my original flights were booked for July 2020. COVID came along and that was postponed to the following year. They were cancelled at the very last minute. So then 2022, so this summer just gone, was the last chance. I thought, third lucky, if not this time, I'll postpone Colombia for a few years. I think the video just turned off.
Sorry.
So we went to Providencia and we weren't aware that the airport was closed to tourists. There was absolutely no information, no publicity that the island was closed at the time of booking the flights. I booked an Airbnb, again, very little communication in regards to it being closed. So we eventually got there via San Andre, and it was stark. I was aware of what had happened, but I was, and you and I had spoken as well about the desired rebuild, potential rebuild. But it was stark is probably the best word. Different regions of the island were more developed than others.
Yeah.
the south, the more tourist rich area, Southwest Key, was quite well developed on along the path to being back to normal. But the northern part of the island, so I'm not sure if you know the geography of the island. So the airport is on kind of midway through the east coast. So you go further north and you're on the main town. It's just destroyed still.
So I mean, that main town and the airport and so on, there's no tourism there aside from like the airport, really.
No, you might go there to get your supplies. Yeah. There's a couple of inaccessible beaches. You have to, you know, you climb up and down over a couple of very, very steep hills. But no, there's no tourism there. It does seem like, I don't know the decision process, but maybe tourism was prioritized because the south of the island is by far more developed than the north. Around the beach area. We'll talk about the stakeholders that were involved in the rebuild, but from the people that we spoke to, a lot of the wealthier people, maybe the second homeowners, took matters into their own hands and you know, privately rebuilt their properties to try and open up as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there was this talk. So I want to know sort of what you... When you looked at that town or looked at towns that were not rebuilt, what are we looking at? There's still ruins of houses or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just destroyed houses. Yeah. Without question. The things that I've living in the UK, I've not seen these things, with the naked eye. You've seen them on TV. I've never seen it in that environment before, and just complete destruction, complete and utter destruction. The mangroves were completely ripped from the floor, and buildings leveled, and just complete. It's difficult to articulate it apart from saying complete destruction. The very main nucleus of the town, where there's two supermarkets opposite each other, a cafe above, were rebuilt, and you can see where the new buildings have been built. And the new buildings compared to old buildings. But 90% still needs to be rebuilt.
And do these new buildings look like they might survive another hurricane, or they look like...
Yeah, well, we spoke to some people about this, chucking a lime in the sea with a beer in the hand, and people that tourists that come over from Providencia, moved abroad and come back, and they've rebuilt their homes with concrete and more fortified materials. But that wasn't the case with the government built buildings. It was still being built with predominantly with wood, and just they were saying just waiting for the next hurricane because it's just going to be the same process over again. So the promises that have been kept about rebuilding, not like in the 100 days, obviously. So some buildings have been rebuilt, but just perhaps not in the secure measure you'd want them to be.
I mean, it just sounds, they're so far away, really. I mean, as the crow flies, from Colombia. And of course, the history of Providencia as a pirate island, it's where Henry Morgan launched his attack on Panama and sacked Panama and had that huge pirate fleet. And then, of course, it's another place where the Puritans settled. So there were two wings of the Puritans. One went to Jamestown, Virginia. One went to Providencia. Providencia is not very easy to farm because it's a volcanic. I mean, it's a volcano, basically. So that failed. And then it's been sort of just a cast-off island that is only recently becoming a tourist destination. But it's fortunately... I guess, shielded from the mass construction in San Andres, which is, for me, kind of brutal. What could be an amazing island in terms of, sort of, let's say, ecotourism, beach tourism. It doesn't have to be luxury, but the building, and we know what's gone on, is there's been a huge amount of money laundering through San Andres, but Providencia has been shielded from this.
Yeah.
And it's a... It's sort of like the greatest secret in the Caribbean in that respect. But of course, this hurricane a year ago absolutely decimated it. And I don't know if it's because of political ill will, if there's inherent racism towards, you know, let's say a Caribbean island. I don't understand, because, I mean, I'll get into the politics a little bit. These islands, San Andres and Providencia, are of course claimed by Nicaragua, which is right there. I mean, and if Colombia paid more attention to them, therefore they would have a greater case in front of the, you know, the Hague and so on. But there's this sort of just overlooking at them. There's no real hospital in Providencia. You get sick, you get taken to San Andres, but then you get taken up to Medellin or Bogota. And, you know, by that time, who knows what's going to happen? And you know, it's a sad situation. We go there, and of course, it's amazing. But the local people, it's another reality, and now it's an even greater reality, a different reality to them. And I think that you were out there in this first wave of tourism is a huge deal, because it is dollars in the pockets, you know, of the people on the ground. I mean, were they grateful? Was there a real sense of relief that tourism was coming back?
Yeah, so the tourism started on the 23rd of June. That's when it officially reopened. We arrived 22nd, 23rd of July. So about
a month later,
I would say. And yeah, there was definitely an element of gratitude, but I think there was also an element of, I was very wary of it, going back to my lecturer role, of it becoming almost a dark tourism trip. And I didn't want to be seen as gawping over a rebuild and like you said, the decimation of the hurricane. So it was quite a difficult balance to strike. I mean, Katie and I, you know, everything we did was try to do it through local people. I mean, you know, we did some incredible things. We'll go through all the different activities that we did. We did an amazing boat tour, which we booked through a person that was known by the person who was managing the property we were staying in. It was like, we went through three different people. We got a WhatsApp number from the person managing our property, who then was in touch with somebody else. And then it was somebody else picked us up on their motorbike, and they got dropped off in a boat. And then it was someone completely different that took us out on this boat trip. I mean, the places, the water, it's just, like you say, it's just sensational. And everyone was, there was a gratitude, but there was also a real pride. And the inherent racism that you mentioned a few minutes ago is without question apparent. You know, they are fully aware. People are fully aware that they've kind of been left on their own a little bit, and they're doing it themselves in spite of what was promised and not delivered. And they, you know, they're just, communities are digging in together, and the different different areas are, you know, helping each other out. And there's a real community spirit. And I've not really sampled that before for what was essentially, for us, I don't like the word holiday, but it was a holiday. And to see, you know, we wanted to try and get involved as much as possible. But there's definitely a desire to overcome the challenges that are not being met by the government. I think that's probably fair to say.
I think also, therefore, what you talk about, the sort of the decimation and the so on, it's disaster porn, isn't it? You didn't want it to become that, taking photos you're a lecturer in tourism. If you put sort of photos up on that, it is kind of like a study. You show what's going on. You're not just taking it up to get a million more followers on your Instagram type thing. You're not posing, you know, with emaciated babies or anything. It's not that kind of thing. But I think important for someone who comes to this with a real knowledge of the academic side of tourism. I think that's where, you know, rather than just as a holiday maker, you're there as that, but you're looking at it through different eyes.
All the time. And in these conversations with different, so just for example, we're on the boat trip, our boat captain, just a speedboat, and Katie and I, and our boat captain Harley introduced as the bike. We talked a lot about one of the things that he said that we'll never forget, and this really, really emphasizes this community spirit. He talked about the fact that if it had been San Andre instead of Providencia that was impacted upon by the hurricane, then San Andre just wouldn't be here anymore. San Andre doesn't have the mountains in the middle that Providencia has. So he said that we are grateful that it's Providencia that was affected, because we can survive this. We can come back and, you know, we have the protection of the mountains, yeah. Whereas San Andre will just be completely wiped out. And that, we both try to play it a little, you know, it's quite an emotional statement to make, yeah. You know, knowing what happened and having seen it, you know, with our eyes. It was, that's a huge thing to say. So the community spirit and the fact that it's, you and I have talked before about this idea of almost promoting the people. I mean, that to me was the evidence of that. If that's what the people are like here, then that's your marketing, you know, that's what you go for. These people are incredible. But in terms of, you know, the attractions are, you know, there's so much to see. El Pico, the climb to the peak, the waters, the beaches. I mean, it's a phenomenal place. But they've just got to be so careful with how they manage it and how they plan it and how it develops from here on in. It would be very, very easy. And there's already talk, you know, the airport is being rebuilt but expanded. Ports are being expanded as well. There's a couple of islands off the East Coast, incredibly beautiful. We didn't get their names. I think maybe Turtle Island was one of them, perhaps.
It's one, yeah.
Where they're building a quay so people can, you know, and then they're going to build bars and restaurants. At the moment, it's this incredibly beautiful deserted island.
Yeah, the travel. Touring. One of the travel writer for in a years ago for Time Out. His name was Chris Moss. Wrote a few pieces about Providencia, and I remember I met him in person, and we were like saying, I mean, I've said I've been a couple of times, and I love it, and I love it. And he goes, you know, I was in two minds about writing these articles because I don't want anyone else to find it.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing. But it is that thing is that it needs to be low level local tourism.
Yeah,
because it can't cope. I mean, with big tourism, and it wouldn't be able to cope not only with infrastructure as well, but also the environment is so delicate. Now, San Andres has been, I would say, ruined. But like you say, if the hurricane had hit San Andres, it's low. It's a sandy spit. It would have just taken everything with it.
Yeah.
There's one hill. It's geographically so different to Providencia. But that's an amazing thing to have heard. Is that oh no, we're glad it hit here.
Yeah,
you know, that's someone who lives there. We're glad it took our livelihoods and our wealth and our everything than San Andres. Isn't that amazing?
It was surreal. We both, you know, Kate and I looked at each other, and like I said, we tried to keep the British stiff upper lip. But it was, I don't think you'd get that here.
No, you'd want it to hit the blue side of Birmingham. Don't say anything. That's me saying it there. So you don't have to say anything. Oh yeah, I mean, as a Watford supporter, there's a town in Bedfordshire that we would prefer it to. But I won't mention anything else. But that said, I mean, just incredible. And I think, you know, to go and to see and to spend some money and to try and help and spread the word. And now I'm sure you're back at university. You'll be talking about it and the image. And this is the thing, again, we've talked about when we met in Bogota, is when we think about these, I'm never fully on board with the whole country branding campaign. I think it's one of those marketing things that justifying the expense that needs to be spent for a foreign direct investment and for tourism. But if you've got what you've got, then people will come. Of course, you need to promote it. But I think when Pro Colombia started out back in the mid-2000s or working on tourism, the first campaign was Colombia es Pasión. And that was a direct implication that the people were just amazing. And I think that was always the best one. And like you said, you know, what we should be promoting the people because...
Yeah.
You talked. I mean, these are the incredible people, the Raizales up there in the islands. They're incredible, especially what you've just mentioned. But to come to the mainland as well, whether it be Antioquia, Cundinamarca, where Boyacá is, where Bogotá is, or the Coffee Zone, or elsewhere that you traveled around, the people are just wonderful. I mean, this is surely the if we're going to market Colombia, let's market it that way rather than. It was a few years ago, it's Colombia Sabrosura, which doesn't translate. That's like Colombia is like joyful, tasty type thing. Oh, and then there was Colombia's ritmo, so Colombia's rhythm. Yes, but it's a bit nebulous, isn't it? We've got lots of types of music.
Mean anything, yeah.
And then there was The Only Risk Is Wanting to Stay, which was the play on I guess kidnapping back in the day, which I actually didn't find too bad in truth, because it was kind of pointed at people like me who've stayed here. But I mean, I can understand those who've had the issues with it. As someone in sort of academia with tourism, what do you think about these kind of promotion marketing campaigns? What's your sort of take on it?
I think it's incredibly difficult when you have I'm very fortunate. I've done a lot of traveling, not as much as you, but I've done a lot of traveling, and I've never been to a country as diverse as Colombia. To try and encapsulate everything in that country into one advertising campaign or one marketing campaign will be incredibly difficult. One of the few constants throughout the country is the people. Whether you have an advertising campaign that focuses on people in different natural environments, perhaps with a inclusion of a city like Cartagena, perhaps something you could do. It's very, very difficult. I don't envy the people in charge of doing something like that. Just from someone that is one, I said to you, when I was away, I was very, very surprised, pleasantly surprised by the number of solo female travelers that were traveling. Mm-hmm. Really surprised. I thought about writing an article about. You mentioned the previous campaign, The Only Risk Is Wanting to Stay. That doesn't really seem to be, there's no discussion around that anymore. Like, it's just seen as perhaps not mainstream, but it's not far off there now from being a destination where people just think about going to.
Yeah.
But to try and encapsulate the jungle and the beaches and the cities and the Amazon and the Pacific and the islands in one campaign would just be impossible. And you'd be doing a disservice to all of them. How do you involve everything? So it's more niche campaigns, isn't it? You pick your demographic and you go for you target the colonial cities at the people that would like to go and visit his history and the jungle, adventurers. You target those campaigns rather than one whole sort of one size fits all.
Because we don't have the Machu Picchu, which is that's the image for Peru. Yeah. We don't have the Galapagos, the image for Ecuador, and Costa Rica for so long has taken the sort of pura vida. We are the natural place and so on. But Colombia, as I've said before and I've said again, it's the sleeping giant of ecotourism. But how do you sort of get this together? And as you say, you're doing disservice to regions. There was one time when they always put the costeño hat, the volteado up as an image, but it's an image for, the northern section of the country. It's not the image for the south, which is more Andean. It's not the image for Antioquia or the coffee zone. It's not the image for Bogota. Yeah. And so it's very tough. And that's Colombia. It has too much to be able to.
Well, that's a really great way of putting it. I think it does. I had a month there. So I was with my son and my friend for 2.5 weeks. And then with Katie for my partner for 2 weeks and barely scratched the surface. Didn't get to see Mompas, didn't get to see the Pacific, the Amazon regions. I had a month there and I like to do sort of 3 nights really in a place. Mm-hmm. Then I like to move on to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I didn't scratch the surface. So to try and fit everything into one campaign would be very, very
difficult. So let's hear a bit more about where you went, because I think there were places that you preferred over others and there were places where you had more of an adventure. And I recall you saying something about Tayrona National Park. And of course, we know it for its idyllic beaches and the indigenous populations. It's sacred to them and so on. Did you have quite an epic hike through there or something?
Oh, we just were not prepared for the hike whatsoever. So we... this is when I was out. We was out with Luca, who's my 14-year-old son, and a friend of mine, similar age, 38. And we just had no idea what this hike was going to be like. So we had I don't own a pair of walking boots, so I don't have walking sticks. We only had our big relatively big backpacks, and we went to the Calabazzo entrance and just started. We had our yellow fever vaccines as instructed by the Colombian Tourism Board. Got to the entrance of the park, wanted to show our pass, that we, you know, our evidence of our yellow fever vaccines, not required. So that's £190 I'm not going to see again. And then the hike started, and it just didn't end for a really long time.
Why did you go in the Calabasso entrance?
Because like, where we were staying, I think it's Playa Blanca. Yeah. That's the name where we were. So that's where we were recommended to enter to get to Playa Blanca.
Because it's a long hike from there.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. The first part of the hike is incredibly steep.
Yep.
I just didn't do enough. I think when it was so many places in one trip, you know, that every place got sort of a tertiary bit of research, but not a really in-depth analysis. So I just assumed, and you should never assume, it's going to be relatively flat, but quite long and flat. It just wasn't at all. So yeah, it was incredibly steep with our big backpacks, and I had a pair of Converse. A friend of mine had his Adidas Gazelles, and we were getting, you know, 20-year-olds going past us with like these small day bags and their walking poles, sticks, with their hiking boots. Like, what are we ourselves in for here? And we did about a third of the journey, and there was a little sort of stop off to get a bottle of water, which we did, and that was fantastic as well. Actually, that was cafes. It wasn't a cafe, more of a
just a stand.
I don't really know how to say it. Run by people that were promoting or educating about the different tribes that were in the national park. So we got a bottle of water, which probably the most needed bottle of water I've ever had in my entire life. And while we were sat down drinking the water, they were telling us about the different tribes, and they were making crafts. So we bought some little bits and pieces, and one of the boys took Luca away to show him different things in this area, which is fantastic.
That's cool.
And then the next two-thirds of the journey started, and it was from there that they had the kilometer countdown. So like 4 kilometers, 3 kilometers. I can run 5 kilometers pretty quickly. It just didn't end. It was up and down across streams, over boulders, climbing over tree trunks. And you could hear the sea. You could see it. You were just so far away from it. By the time we got there, we were pretty broken. So that first Avatha in the where we were staying was just glorious.
So was it about a 7-hour hike then?
Five and a half.
Okay. It's the geography. That's it, isn't it? And I'm going to, I will be having the guy, he's from your neck of the woods, from Birmingham area, Daniel Eggington, on the show again. He's the guy who's been trying to cross the Darien Gap.
Yeah, I saw this. Yeah.
But he did it. Mm-hmm. He did it this time.
Yeah.
On the western side. Yeah. And I got his call on the satellite phone just to check in when he got through, having been abandoned by his guides. And I guess he was pretty much lost. But I got a satellite call saying, I've made it through. And it's the worst thing I've ever done. So there you go.
I mean, that's incredible, because if I can't, you know, it was an amazing hike. It was incredible. The things we saw was... I mean, the jungle is the thing that I will take away from my trip to Colombia. Green would be the colour. I mean, I expected, when I was planning this, you know, 2 years ago, the beaches and Cartagena, and that absolutely is amazing. The beaches were. We'll come to Cartagena later, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The jungle is just that colour green. It blew me away. So we saw amazing things, but it was tough. So what Daniel did, I can't wait for that episode, because that would just be...
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hopefully I'm talking to him next week. I'm actually recording a whole bunch of episodes in advance, because I've got some travel up ahead and so on. But I want to ask, how Luca, your son, 14 years old, how did he find the trek?
Oh, he's fantastic. He's incredibly intrepid. I carried his bag a little bit. Purely because I didn't, you know, it's one thing doing the trek, doing it with a backpack on your weighing you down is another thing altogether. But he was brilliant. He loves this sort of thing.
Okay.
He loved the entire experience. Good. Tough at times, so we stopped. We had our, I always try and make sure that he gets to soak in the natural environments he's around. So we had, in a 5-hour trek, maybe a little bit less than that. There's plenty of time for that. We also, we put our loudspeaker bows on and played some music as well, and just to try and treat up the spirits. Okay. He was great. Loved it. The can of Coke he had at the end. So coming back out of the national park, I promised him an ice cold kind of full sugar Coke. I think that got him through for the last half. And the noise he made, I've not heard him make before. But he was amazing. I've got some great photos of him trekking through, and awesome. he just does it. No moaning, all good.
I'm glad to hear that. Now let's move on, because I know that I think Cartagena was your least favorite place in Cartagena, and of course I have all sorts of thoughts about Cartagena, and actually have to go through because one of the cities that feeds us in Mompox, let's say, in terms of tourism, but I am very wary of the city, and I'd like to hear your opinions.
It just seemed out of control. You Google Cartagena, and the pictures of the buildings make you think of an Antigua and Guatemala or Granada and Nicaragua, and it's just a different beast. Yeah. That's the point. I'm stealing your line there. I think different
I think
beast.
So.
it's just incredibly busy. You don't really get a chance to enjoy the architecture because there's just so many people around you, and it just never at any point felt in any kind of peace. It's difficult to articulate. I'm very aware of the first world problem mantra with this, but it from what my expectations and what I hoped it would be like, having been to Granada and Antigua and León, it was just very different. Very, very different. The beaches, it's not, one thing I would absolutely say, I've got no issue saying this, it's not a beach city. You don't go to Cartagena for the nearby beaches.
No, absolutely not.
It's a city to go to see the architecture and then to move on and go. And we went east from Cartagena.
I am always saying that to people. It's not a beach destination, and they're very clever in their marketing of it. They try and say all the beaches and so on with this, but it's not a beach destination. I'm sorry, I've got a child crying behind me. But it's not a beach destination, and it shouldn't be marketed so, because I think that's disingenuous and does the destination a disservice, I think, as well, because you expect it. And if you go to the beaches, let's say on Boca Grande, you probably won't have seen, but in the last couple of weeks, there have been every year there are the same scandals that come up. It's kind of like the silly season in press reporting. Now, there were some Mexican tourists who were charged, around $1,000 for some beers and some fish and a massage or something. And then there were some Ecuadorians as well. And, the tourists are taken advantage of because that it is the industry. It is the industry in Cartagena. If you don't work in it, or if you don't work in the refinery or in the port, really, and of course, it's a massive, I would say, underclass of people, unfortunately, who live beyond the city walls, the old UNESCO walls, who don't have the opportunities and so are looking for anything. And of course, I don't justify the overcharging and so on, because you're ruining it. And that you've got to understand that you treat people right and they come back and they make references to it and so on. It's a tough one, Cartagena, on that point. It's a tough one. And so you spent 3 days there?
Three days, including a day in, is it Playa Brava?
Playa Blanca.
Blanca.
That's, I don't have a lot of good things to say about that either.
No, that was a day trip. And the other thing, you're saying promoting it as a beach destination, you're actually taking away potential trade from other beaches along the north coast that would benefit from having the trade that the Cartagena was got. Playa Blanca was incredibly busy, and then at 4 o'clock everybody left, so we were in the car park at the beach for a good hour and a half
waiting.
Different minibuses and buses and taxis and cars left. So I think an alternative way of marketing Cartagena to take away from the beach tours might actually make it a little bit quieter, disperse tourists around the country in different places, which could be a plan, because no one's going to leave those beaches and thinking, I've had an amazing day at the beach. It's the first beach we went to in Colombia.
Yeah.
And you know, again, you see the Colombia beaches in the Lonely. You know, I'm still one of the last. Probably with the Lonely Planet book, and you know that's how I do my planning in the local boozer with a beer, and it's the beaches are a big part of the draw, and if that's the first beach you see in a flagship destination, it was a bit of an eye opener. So I think that would be one way of, you know, that's your colonial, your beautiful city. There's other places to go to for beaches.
Yeah, it's a tough one as well, because of course they don't want to give up that tourism. They don't want to give up, because it's the eternal city of Colombian tourism. And, you know, while tourism in local regions might be somewhat altruistic, in these let's say mega destinations, it's everyone's fighting for that last person to fill a room, especially when you've got places with 200 rooms. And I guess it's the Caribe, Hotel Caribe has got that, Hilton, there's a Radisson now, and so on. So these are big things. It's not, we're not just talking about the hundreds of boutiques that seem to exist. It's a strange one. I don't know how you do it, but I've always said, and you know, you didn't make it to Mompos, but I've always said, and I always looked at like a absolute extra, you know, terrestrial. In a few years ago, we had the tourism union in Mompos were invited and to have a meeting with the mayor, newly elected mayor. And as always, I was at the back because I don't like meetings, so I hide. But we went through, the mayor sat down and he asked each of us, so hotel owners, tour guides, so on, to what he could do for us. So every person sort of stood up and what they wanted. Everyone was talking about infrastructure, roads. So roads and bridges to get more tourists in. Everyone said that. And it got to me. And of course, you know, it's weirdo Brit, bitter, sat there. I went, I don't care about roads and I don't care about bridges. I said, you focus on getting good hospitals, working on the drains, and the schools, and the tourism will come. I mean, we'll look after the local people, because mass tourism is not what we want here. It's a small UNESCO World Heritage site which needs to be managed. We need to have rules on how buses enter the city, how trucks go through the colonial area. And my God, how they looked at me. I was just like, what am I? Am I trying to damage it? Am I trying not to help them in tourism? I was like, no. We've got, at that point, there was like 12 hotels. We don't even have beds for 1,000 people, you know, let's just say. It's not even like 600. We probably do now. But I was like, what are you going to do with mass tourism if they get off in buses and stuff that drive through the center of town, you know, damaging the integrity of a UNESCO World Heritage Site? And the local people need the education, they need the hospitals, and they need the drains. And it all goes together. And it's also, and that's my feeling a bit towards Cartagena. I'm not even going to use it. I want to say leveling up, like Boris. But I don't want to say it. But if we could bring, let's say, some of the absolute misery, not even poverty, beyond the walls in Cartagena up to a livable standard, then surely we're creating a bit more of a community. And I think that's got lost in Cartagena as the community a bit. You know, I think we have to work amongst the traditional communities. And unfortunately, so many have been displaced through economy, selling their houses and selling and so on, because it is that tourism destination. But Cartagena, I mean, we could talk about that, and we could write you know, dissertations about it, because there are so many elements that raise there. Where else did you get to in Colombia? What more? So you were in Bogota.
Yeah, so Bogota to Cartagena, we went across to Tayrona, and then we recovered from Tayrona in Palomino.
Nice.
Which was really like Palomino. That was a really good recuperation point from what was Tirona. And then back to Bogota via Santa Marta. And then San Andre, Providencia, Providencia to Medellin. And that was a last minute. We had flights booked from I've missed out. We went to Minca as well. Sorry, we went to Minca. Yeah, that Minca was beautiful.
Yeah.
I should have missed the Minca.
Minca's special.
That was really where the the adventure started. Because Bogota was a couple of days to sort of acclimatize, and then Cartagena wasn't what we thought. So the Minca was just beautiful. And we met somebody in Minca, a friend of mine now, who said he lived in Medellin, German guy. Gotta go to Medellin. So we, instead of flying from San Andre back to Bogota, we changed our flights and went to Medellin, and really liked Medellin. Medellin to Jardín.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Jardín to Salento. Salento back to Bogota.
Okay, so you got some coffee zone and you got the Antioquia part. But otherwise, the rest of it was what we would call sort of northern Colombia and so on. There's too much left there.
Oh, man, there's so much left. There's a whole west coast to look at. There's the Amazon part. We'll definitely be back.
But that's a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing to have got a flavor for it, and it's a good thing to have got around a bit. And I mean, the first 2.5 weeks you traveled with your son, what would you say as Colombia with destination with children?
I thought it was fantastic. I think you have to have I already have one child. I can't really relate him to any of the children. You have to have a bit of patience. He's incredibly willing. I thought it was perfectly set up. We stayed in, we always, when we go away, we always stay, it was all hostels. Mm-hmm. Apart from Katie and I, when we went, we were in Airbnbs. But when I was there with my friend and Luca, all hostels, dorm rooms. Normally dorm rooms on our own. So it'd be the three of us in a 4-bed dorm and... Mm-hmm. I don't think there was ever a time. Yeah, I think it was always just us in a dorm room. But you know, around other people, other tourists, which I love. I think that's incredibly important for him to speak to people from different parts of the world and to learn. He loves, he loves that as well. He likes to have a bit of his own time. But
yeah,
it's an adventure. It's not a 2-week all inclusive. You know, it is an adventure. I did have a conversation. We've been previously to Costa Rica and. We traveled down the Baja Peninsula in Mexico. So he's aware of what these sort of trips are like. They're a little different to trips he goes on with his mom. I'm not sure which he prefer. He could tell you that. But amazing. The people were so friendly towards him. And I'm trying to learn a bit of Spanish. By no means perfect, but enough to try and solve some problems if they arise. But he tries to learn the basics as well. And everyone's incredibly friendly towards him. He really bought into the idea of the adventure. It was great in Tirona. We were all a little bit poorly at times as well. I think with the change in food and climate, and he dealt with that incredibly well. It's a country. The only time I've ever taken him away on a trip where we went to any one place, we went to Sharm el Sheikh in Egypt. Mm-hmm. He was 6. And we had 10 days in a beautiful hotel on the beach. Had a water park in the hotel grounds. And I'm thinking, this is going to be amazing. 10 days of just splashing around, beach, just snorkeling. And he was bored by day 4. Day 4, I've done the water park now and the slides, and I've been in the beach now. I want to go and see somewhere else. Well, I don't know if you've been to Sharm el Sheikh. It's essentially a walled resort now. You can't really leave. You would at that point. This is 2009. Yeah, no, 12, maybe 13. Okay. There was the heightened terrorist threat, so you couldn't go into the deserts. So since then, it's always been right. We're going to go on a holiday, but we're going to place to place. Denmark, Sweden, Portugal, Spain, Costa Rica, Mexico. Colombia was the first time it really tested him. His physical ability to hike through Tirona and even Palomino. I don't know if you've been to Palomino. You can do the tubing
down the river,
down from the top. Yeah, down the river. Yeah, but the hike to the entrance to the tubing is not the sort of thing that you would, everybody could do. You know, it's pretty precarious at times and very, very thin ledges. And, you know, you've got to carry your tube with you. So that's, it's not like, it's difficult. It's not the sort of thing that you just do. But he was brilliant. And I think it's a great thing to do with the children. I think it's, you know, as long as you let them know this is what's coming your way, and but you're going to float down the river in your tube, and then you need to come out in the oceans there, and on the meander you can buy yourself an empanada, and I think that's a really, really amazing thing. So he absolutely loved it. It was his, it's, he said since he came back, it's has been his favorite trip. Again, he also said the jungles were the things he will take away from this, and having, you know, like you said before about Costa Rica being ecotourism number one, he would say that that was be Colombia, which is a, you know, huge compliment.
Well, I think that's the part of the thing is that Colombians do love children. They do love them. And I think that helps immensely. And I always, I get people getting in touch. It's like, I want to come with my children. I want to do this. Do it. Do it. The infrastructure in circumstances is lacking, but this is only a question of time. And, you know, when you're talking about the thin ledges and so on, well, so long as you know, and so long
this
as
this is it. And I actually think that part of the charm and the romanticism of it is that it's not easy. Mm. And I think if you take that, you know, going back to Providencia and San Andre, Providencia has got a lot to learn from San Andre. It would be really easy. The easy thing to do in Providencia is to just do a San Andre and do a money grab. You're going to lose all the charm. And there's a, you know, one of the pushes at the moment in academia is looking into this idea of the high quality tourist. And actually, should it be more high quality tourism than the high quality tourist? You know, high quality tourist is incredibly classist. Who constitutes a high quality tourist? You could probably say that San Andre has the high quality tourist. Providencia has the adventurer. You're not going to Providencia as a very, very, very affluent person who spent thousands of pounds. You know, you're going there to sample, you know, experiential tourism, to really be amongst the people. I think there's a lot to be said to making it a little bit difficult. You see, you have to hike up to the tubing. Well, that's okay, because you go on a tube down. And I think that if you're going to get family, you know, again, this idea of experiential tourism is families. And this is a huge post-COVID reaction in tourism, families doing things together. You know, it was great. You know, I was walking behind Luca and my friend was in front of him, and we would, you know, helping each other with these tubes. And then we got on the tubes and came down the river, and it was amazing because we did this together. The Tayrona National Park hike back, Luca and I were ahead of my friend quite considerably. We waited at the end, and we didn't want to cross the finish line without him. And we'll always have that now. And I think experiences, things that bring us together, are more important now than ever. And if you make things incredibly easy, you're gonna lose that. If there's a boat that takes you up the river, which you can then shoe back down, there's no satisfaction in that. And I think if families, again, the family typology, a brilliant way to bond with your children by doing things like that together. So I think that is part of the charm, actually, that it's a bit difficult. It's not, getting around is very easy. Buses are incredibly easy to take. You said to me back in 2020, the internal flight network is incredible and so cheap. It's just, you know, a flight from Bogota to San Andre is cheaper than my train from Shrewsbury to Birmingham. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Don't get me
started.
There's
a lot to be said for making a little bit, I just think a little bit of difficulty. And that, and again, this is the adventure.
Yeah. Well, I think it's amazing, an amazing overview of your trip, to be able to think of it on all these, from all of these perspectives. And I also I love this idea of high, you know, not the high quality tourist, but the high quality tourism. And I think that's what the key thing we're probably going to take away from this, aside from watch out in Cartagena. But no more said about that.
And don't have fears before you trek in Tyrone or the night before. Keep it on the agua.
Oh, yeah. But so listen, I mean, this is that we've heard from an expert in the academic world of tourism, a very well-traveled individual, and taking, you know, it's no small feat to take your son over, to South America, and you know, and then your fiance, because congratulations, I know there's a wedding coming up, but it's pretty amazing, and to hear from a lecturer in international tourism management talking about this. I mean, you were able to focus on key things and look at them. And of course, how we plunged into this conversation with Providencia, because so many of us here in the mainland or elsewhere just don't know what's happened. You've seen it. So listen, Simon, thank you so much for your time, because I know you've got you've got to run and prepare classes.
I do have to prepare classes. Yes, the semester has started. We are rocking it. So my upcoming module is Tourism Trends and Futures.
Wow.
Which hopefully you'll be involved in, but we'll definitely look at Providencia as a case study destination as well, because it's on a knife edge where it goes from here.
All right. Well, there we go. We've got plenty to think about. We've been talking to Simon Faulkner. He's up in Shropshire. That's a lecturer of international tourism and management at, I've got it written down, University College Birmingham. So thank you again, lecturer of the year. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. So we will speak again soon, and we'll probably bemoan our relative football team. So thank you again. This has been Columbia Calling, and we'll be back next week with more conversations about Columbia. Now over to some messages from our sponsors, and goodbye. This episode was brought to you by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean. Since 1967, their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. And also, our other sponsor is BNB Colombia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. Check out the website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Colombia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So that's bnbcolombia.com and, of course, latinnews.com. Thank you for everyone for listening. That's us. Farewell. And, of course, check back next week. Bye-bye.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at caskers.com.